welcome back to the Isle of Faces. Or to be more specific, welcome to the very first Isle of Faces bonus episode. Many of you would probably say you need to do more than one episode before you start thinking about bonuses and extras, or should probably let your format settle for a bit before you abandon it completely. To those people, I say meh. This isn't something I intend to do regularly, because you are right, it is against the objective of this podcast, but I do have some specials and bonus episode ideas up my sleeve, and the subject of this one is so important it demands to be done immediately. Before moving on to that, I need to speak about that first episode that came out on Tuesday. Because wowee, you guys, what an episode. I've got a lot of thanks to hand out, but making that episode and seeing the response and hearing people's comments is part of the reason I'm doing this bonus episode, because it's just so damn fun and I wanted to do it again. There's a couple of guys who deserve the lion's share of thanks for making it so fun in the first place, and that's Scad and Matt of Davos Fingers. It's not a secret by any stretch that this pair are the nicest two guys that can be in one room at any given time. They could not have made it easier for me to chat to them, to give super interesting answers to my questions. It almost felt like a campfire to me. I just wanted to sit down and listen to those guys tell stories, as if we were on their podcast, not mine. Going through the editing, I'd get genuinely annoyed at having to listen to me. I just wanted to be listening to their stories. I'm under no false pretenses here. The success of episode 1 is 100% down to those guys, and they couldn't have been better or more interesting. It was absolutely brilliant finding out more about them, both personally and about Davos Fingers itself. No doubt we will hopefully see them back on the island again soon. If you've somehow been living on a planet in a universe that's under a rock, or still in someone's pocket, then you can find the guys at Davos Fingers on Twitter or on Tumblr. And I really recommend not only their A Song of Ice and Fire reread, but also their current work on the Dunk and Egg novellas. On a note of thanks, because we pre-recorded so early with the boys, I didn't get a chance to thank our wonderful artist who designed the Isle of Faces artwork that I'm sure you are currently staring at right now. All of you will agree, it's absolutely brilliant. You can almost feel the mysticism coming right off the picture. We couldn't have found a better piece of artwork to go with the Isle of Faces. That artwork was designed by Emily Adkinson. I'm super sorry if I mispronounced your name, Emily. But please, please give her website a look at emilyadkinson.com, or you can follow her at Bong of Ice and Fire, which is definitely one of the cooler usernames we're going to be talking about. Lastly, I've just got to thank everyone for their response on Tuesday. For all the listens, the likes, the follows, retweets and messages. It was absolutely surreal to read about people listening to the episode, whether it was from people I'd never heard of before, to these huge giants of our fandom chiming in and saying how much they enjoyed finding out more about the lads. I was smiling from ear to ear all day, let me tell you. I've written a bit of a details post on my site about how it all came together, how I nearly cancelled the whole thing, other tidbits like that, a bit of a behind the scenes look. So if you fancy, it's on the website, which is thegrindstone.co.uk. And of course, you can also find Tuesday's episode there, episode 1, ready and waiting. Before I go any further, I just wanted to remind you, this is a podcast for you, the Song of Ice and Fire fans. I know I keep repeating it on Twitter. But if you do want to be a part of it, or you want to suggest something or someone, even if you just want to see something improved, please just let me know. Every tree gets to speak on the Isle of Faces. Okay, so by now, you might be wondering what is actually going on. You may well be saying, okay Joe, we know you've not got a guest, and that's kind of the point of this whole thing, so what's going on? And you'd be right. I've already broken form, I've moved away from what I said I'd be doing, and by now you may well be screaming at me, Joe, that is nothing but bad marketing strategy, and again, you'd be right. But the subject is important enough and dear enough to me that I think it warrants the break. And also, it's my podcast, so there. Today, I want to talk to you about Remembrance Day and the upcoming centenary of the end of World War One. Believe me, I'm not here trying to blow your mind with World War One facts. I'm definitely not going to revolutionise the way you think about war or anything like that. If you do want something that blew my mind about World War One, I couldn't recommend Dan Carlin's podcast more, which is nothing short of stupendous. That's Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. But again, that's not my aim here. My aim, if I'm completely honest, is I just want to do that little bit for the memory of those who served and lost and lived, even in this small, tiny, teeny tiny way that I can. I realise that's not for everyone. Feel free to completely ignore me. I'm not going to take offence at all. You can wait for episode 2 proper, not a problem. But I don't know if I could have my very own platform such as this and still sleep at night if I didn't use it. So here we are. I'll tell you now, there's a brilliant chance of me getting a bit emotional, so if that also makes you feel uncomfortable, you might want to split. For those of you who are still with us, and for anyone perhaps not familiar, Remembrance Day is held every year to commemorate the end of World War I, and as I'd hope you'd all know, this year marks 100 years since its end. In England and in many other places, we will hold a 2-minute silence in order to pay our respects. The other thing we do is wear our poppies for about 3 weeks beforehand. If you turn on the TV and look at any of our politicians right now, you'll see them all flooded with poppies. I actually taught a lesson at the school I work at on the poppy and why we wear it, because I work in an international school and the 5 children I was teaching were all different nationalities and had been asking why I was wearing a poppy. And it was really a lot of fun telling them the story behind it. Obviously, I'm not going to spew all that back at you, but I am going to take part of my lesson to them and give it to you now, which is the part about the story of my great-grandfather, Charlie. I know this sounds like I'm just talking about myself here. There's only one voice, and I'm severely lacking in pairs of fingers that are to be interesting or cool or funny. But it's really not about me. This episode couldn't be less about me if I tried, and hopefully you'll see that by the end. So Charlie, okay? Charlie was born exactly 100 years before me, minus 3 months. He was born in April 1890, I was born in August 1990. So you can see there's a little bit of symmetry working here, which is going to be prevalent throughout, so remember that fact. Okay, so I want to take you to 2014, which is the year I turned 24. I was already out of university, I had a full-time job, I played basketball, it was the same year I met my future wife. I even stumbled on this little old series called Game of Thrones. I had my problems, same as anyone else, but all in all, I hope you'll agree, it wasn't a bad lot. Whereas Charlie, when he turned 24, well, that was just a few months before we got shipped off to war. I spent that year playing basketball, working. I also discovered Skyrim, which took up at least 80% of my time. While I'm pressing buttons to fire CGI arrows, at the same age, Charlie is firing real bullets at real people, and real people are firing real bullets right back at him. In that lesson I taught earlier, I very briefly touched on the conditions of World War I and what it was like to be in the trenches. It was only a 50-minute lesson, so I made it clear I was never going to get across what it was truly like. And who was I to say anyway? I wasn't there. I've never been in the military. I just like reading books or listening to podcasts about it. But still, I told them. I told them how it sends a chill down my spine every time I think about what that man had to do. How he had to go out and kill people. How he had to wake up and think he might die almost every day. Or worse, how he might have to watch his friends die. Which is something I can't even bring myself to try and imagine. I mentioned that I met my wife in 2014. And here's that symmetry again, because Charlie had a girl too. He had a girl called Lucy, who he'd known a while. Back in 1914, they wanted to get married, but Charlie got shipped out instead, so it had to be postponed. So there's this whole other tragic side to that, and something else I forced myself to try and imagine. I try and picture meeting my wife, and then being shipped away to go and live in a muddy trench for 4 years, with death and blood all around me. Like most others, these two sent love letters and notes and all that back and forth throughout the war. My mother was kind enough to send me some pictures of a couple that the family have saved over the years. And there's some brilliant, brilliant pictures of Charlie in uniform and of Lucy writing from home. And luckily, for me especially, Charlie was able to eventually work up enough leave to come home and wed his darling Lucy. There's a brilliant picture of that too. It looks something like a still from Downton Abbey. They're all there in their huge hats and dark coloured dresses. Charlie's in full uniform, as is his best man. All of them dressed up in their Sunday bests, posing in front of a huge Union Jack in the back garden in London. It's honestly a brilliant picture. The only problem really is that the picture was taken in 1915. There were still 3 more years of war left. And essentially the very next day, Charlie is shipped back out again. They've got 3 more years of this. Charlie has 3 more years of blood and guns and mud, mud, mud. He had to do it for 4 years total. That's how long I've known my wife now. I look back to when I first met her and it seems like an age already. And then I have to think, that's how long he had to put up with war for. That's how long he had to fight. And I get that chill again. Through it all, they've got these letters. He has a war journal. It's with other members of our family now, so I've never got to see it, but I hope I will soon. I never met the man. I don't know how he felt about it all, or what he did. Perhaps he was some gun-toting maniac who liked nothing better than the smell of barbed wire in the morning. I doubt it. From my mother's stories, and she did know him, he was about the sweetest man who ever lived. I do know that he sustained a leg wound at some point, I don't know how or when, but it was enough to send him home to his darling Lucy. I'm sure he loved being home, but did he feel guilt of being safe while his brothers were still out there? Did he want to get back and fight and prove himself? Was he just bloody terrified as I would have been, and almost wished that that leg would never heal? But it did, and Lucy had to say goodbye to her husband once again. Get the pen out, it's letter writing time again. Back he went, and there he stayed, until the end of the war, while 16 million people just like him perished. Charlie came home, back to Lucy and back to life. He went and gave everything a person can give, and at the end was told, that's that. Forget about it now. Normal service resumed. How he managed that, I will never ever understand. The manager he did. A few years later, he and Lucy went on to have the first of their 5 children. And again, there is a brilliant picture to go along with the story. This one is taken in 1958 or maybe 59. And it's Charlie and Lucy, now small and wrinkled, sat next to each other on a bench with all their grown-up children and their partners around them. Everyone is absolutely beaming. It couldn't be further from what he had to experience a few decades before. On the far right of that picture is a rather handsome man. Again, it's my grandfather. So why did I tell you this story? What's the point? Theirs is obviously not some Hollywood movie. Theirs was not some Hollywood-worthy romance splashed against the backdrop of the Great War. Charlie won no medals, as far as I know. He was not what some would call a hero. Except that he was. They all were. Charlie's story is the same as millions of other men, except that his had a much happier ending than most. It's a story of the exact same plot as everyone involved in that war, from whichever side, or whatever country. Every single one of them traipsed off to defend something they loved, and they walked through hell to do it. In my opinion, we should be thanking these poor bastards every day of our lives. However we do that is up to us. Whether it's a huge spectacle or a quiet moment of reflection, we do not let their flames go off into the darkness. They lit the fire an entire century ago, and now we've been left to tend it. As I told these kids, through a little bit of tears, I don't mind admitting. That's the point of Remembrance Day. It's not to remember specifically the battles that have changed the course, or the generals, or the newsworthy headlines. It's to remember each and every man and his little story about who he left at home and who he was fighting for and who hopefully he got to go back to. And not only the poor men in these trenches, but the poor women, mothers, daughters, sisters left at home, hoping that the postman doesn't give them the bad word. Now, the kids I was teaching, they're only 11 years old. They're obviously not going to take the weight of World War One, of course, so they shouldn't. But they are all from different nationalities, and some knew about World War One, and some didn't. My point wasn't just to tell them why I was wearing a poppy. My point was to get them to appreciate wherever in the world they're from, they owe someone a debt of thanks for going out and fighting and having to do all these horrible things so that we don't have to. I get annoyed every single year the Remembrance Day isn't made a bigger deal. I think it should be the biggest day of the year. I don't understand why the world doesn't stop every single year. I don't understand why it doesn't stop dead silent and think about what happened. I tried to give them some small idea about the pure savagery they would have to go through between each other against other humans that they had no beef with, and how this was all done not for them, not because it would gain them anything, not because they would go home suddenly kings of their own land or rich beyond their wildest dreams or anything like that. We spoke quite a lot about why these men did it, and whether that was because they were made in a lot of cases, or because of national pride, which was quite different then, whether it was to serve king and country, serve the flag, or more than likely it was because you wanted to protect what was at home, which is something I believe 98% of people who've ever fought in any war probably go off, not because they want to kill anyone, because they want to save someone. I don't know Charlie, he died long before I came along, but I like to think he probably went to save his Lucy and his mother and father, who was still around at the time as well. Either way, for whatever reason, these men were there, they were there, and they were facing men with the exact same motivation. They probably didn't want to be there. Probably didn't want to kill. They probably, especially for World War One, had no idea what it would be like. We spoke briefly about, and again, I won't do this justice, please go and listen to Dan Carlin, about how in wars previous it was a glorious thing, it was a glorious story where you rode around and got yourself a colony and you were home by lunchtime, shake hands with the other team. And that's not to downplay, obviously, the horrors of previous wars, but that's how it was seen back in the day. Jump over to France, it's probably the only chance you'll ever get to be on the continent anyway. Why not go and have a muck around with some from a country you've never heard of and go home? And then they will get there and it's not that holiday. It's not line up with your horses, draw your sword and charge. It's hope to God you didn't get mowed down or caught in that barbed wire or breathe in that gas. It's crawl around in the mud among your dead friends and their feces and anything you've not got time to think of like a normal human being because you're just trying to survive. It's literally grabbing hold of life, maybe by tearing it away from someone else. Because again, you're trying to think of that person at home, more than likely. Maybe you are thinking of flag and king and country. Maybe. I'm sure some of them were. But I'm going to bet most of them were thinking of their Lucy back home and how they were worth crawling through mud and bones and guts. And the thing is, of course, a lot of people mistakenly think that wearing a poppy is somehow pro-war or boasting, which is hilarious when you think about it. Firstly, I'm the least pro-war person you'll ever meet. That's why I remember them so much. I think you can tell I'm not particularly a fan of what they had to go through. It's not a poppy, it's nothing to do with pro-war. It's highlighting how terrible war is. Of course it is. And as for the boasting remark, you're truly insane if you think anybody won that war. And luckily, when I asked the children that question, do you think anyone won the war? They all shook their heads straight away, because they're not idiots. Nobody won that war. You can't win a war, you can't win anything, when you're losing 900,000 men, in the case of England. You can't win anything when people had to go through those kind of settings. So, yes, I remember Charlie. Of course I do. And I feel terrible for him. But I feel just as terrible for the poor bastards on the other side. Whatever flag they're under, whatever country they're for, whatever the motivation, they are in just as poor conditions, they're just as likely to die. Also, depending on what country they're from. They've got to scrabble through the mud, among their friends, among the feces just as much as the other side. All these people, who are no different from each other, are all reciting, mainly just because they've been told to. I think anyone who knows me at all will tell you I'm the biggest Terry Pratchett fan. He actually still lived not very far from me at all. And in one of his books, he sums this up as only Terry Pratchett can. The book is Monstrous Regiment. If you haven't read it, I don't understand you. Definitely go and find it. But this quote comes via the character of Sergeant Jackram in the middle of a war campaign, as he explains to the young recruit Polly a bit about the nature of war. And he says, I'm not going to do the voice. I try it sometimes when I read Lord of the Rings to my wife. I sometimes try and do a Gandalf voice, but I'm not going to do any today. He says, you know what most of the military training is, Perks? He went on. All that yelling from spitbubs like Strappy. It's to turn you into a man who will, on the word of command, stick his blade into some poor sod just like him who happens to be wearing the wrong uniform. He's like you, you're like him. He doesn't really want to kill you. You don't really want to kill him. But if you don't kill him first, he'll kill you. That's the start and finish of it. I think you can probably see what I mean there about these millions and millions of men who are just like Charlie. They have their Lucy. They've got their friends. They might have their friends around them. And even if you strip all that away, even if they don't, it comes down to, I do not want to kill anyone, but I also don't want to be killed. And when you add millions and millions of men all thinking that at the exact same time, you get something that we ended up calling the Great War. And again, I apologise for the emotional side of this, but I picture myself in a trench in a field in France, being screamed at to kill someone or save someone, or that call to go over the top, that whistle, that blood-curdling whistle. If you've never seen the series Blackadder, by the way, it's the best TV series ever produced by humans. If you've never seen the final episode of season 4, I don't understand you, then you need to go and watch it. But again, I can't imagine myself being told that and having to do any of that, and it chills me now to this very day. Because I didn't get to choose to be born in 1990, same way Charlie didn't choose to be born in 1890. It's all just luck. It very, very easily could have been the other way around. And I'll tell you now, I don't know if Charlie would have ever existed were I the one born in 1890. I don't know if I could have done any of that. And I don't know the details. I don't know if Charlie had to kill anyone specifically. I don't know what battles he was in. But I'm going to play the odds and say he had to do atrocious things and see atrocious things and feel atrocious things. All because he was told to. And all just to protect Lucy and his family. Now, I could start making some links to A Song of Ice and Fire here. I could talk about the War of the Five Kings and its effects on the Riverlands, the experiences of Arya or Jaime or Brienne. We could analyse the Broken Man speech. But there are many, many others who have explored George's painting of the horrors of war. I encourage you to find them instead. After all, again, that is kind of the point of this podcast. There's so many examples, I won't list them all here, but if you want a starting off point, I'd head over to warsandpoliticsoficeandfire.com, Mr. Brendan B. Fisher's home turf. He'll let you in, it's fine. Although George's depiction is above description, if you want, as are those essays and podcasts analysing his work, it is fiction at the end of the day. And what we are talking about really and truly happened. So for today, and probably not just for today, the island remains sombre. Although having said that, if you can think of something better than weirwood trees to symbolise remembrance, I'd like to hear it. You can remember however you need to, but when you do, do it for all. I taught that lesson to 5 11-year-olds with 5 different nationalities in the room. We were all able to trace back how our country was involved. It was a world war, after all, and they don't just hand that title out. So, I told the children, I wear my poppy, for Charlie, of course, as he's my family, and so easily could have been me. But I also wear it for all the other soldiers in that war, and all the spouses, parents, and children who waited at home and had to live through their own kind of hell. I remember those who did it 100 years ago, and in every war since, and in every conflict going on today, and I offer them my thanks. The last thing I said to these children, and I like to think that they took it on board, was it doesn't matter if it's a poppy or not. However you do it is fine, but do it. I want to thank all of you who stuck around to listen to me talk about war and past relatives and things I'm probably really not qualified to talk about. Again, I know I'm being very cheeky hijacking my own podcast, and I robbed you of what's been promised. I will try and make it up to you. Don't worry, the next episode will be back to usual with a brand new guest. I'd like to say I've thought of some words, some smarter sounding words or more resonating words to sign off with here. But I don't really. Nothing I say or do or wear or do a podcast about is ever going to do it justice. All I can really say is thank you, Charlie, and thank you to everyone else. Everything I have because of what you gave. You will always, always have my thanks and my remembrance. Hi guys, this is a little addendum to the episode you've just listened to. If you saw on Twitter, I said that I'd found some extra stuff that needed to be included, and this is that. It's 2 minutes past midnight now. I'm on the 12th of November. Remembrance Day is officially finished. The thing that I wanted to add was that, as it happened, me and my wife went to my in-laws, her family's, this weekend, and obviously watching the remembrance service this morning, etc., had her parents talking, and my mother-in-law got out a box of memorabilia, which turned out to be from her grandfather and his brother, So my wife's great-grandfather and, I don't know, great-great-uncle, I don't know what they call that. The point was they both served in World War One also. And the two brothers, they were called Alan and Henry. And Alan, which is the great-grandfather, survived, but Henry did not. He was actually in the intelligence service. I'm a little bit suspicious he might have served as a template for James Bond, because he was in the intelligence service and by all accounts had a lot of lady friends. So maybe. But like I say, she had this box, and while my information on Charlie is severely lacking, and hopefully we'll find out more soon, my wife's family have all this stuff, this huge box of his medals, his service record, both of them, I should say, but they're mainly Henry's, to be honest, because obviously he left a lot of stuff behind. These great thick albums of postcards that the two brothers sent to each other, that they sent back to their mother, that they sent to their friends, all these little kind of stamp-sized pictures that Henry had taken with him through the war, all over the place, down from to Salisbury Plain near me, over to Egypt, and obviously a lot in France and Ypres in Belgium, which is where he perished. Henry actually died on the 16th of February 1918, so he's kind of 9 months short of making it through. He died in no man's land on an intelligence mission, something that apparently he'd done countless times before. And in this real collection was a small cardboard box ringed with black. And this was the government's official service to Henry and Alan's mother. It contained the official telegram explaining what happened. It contained a letter from Henry's commanding officer. All these little knickknacks and whatever had been left. It was amazing to read through it. We sat down for a good few hours looking through all these pictures and piecing together the stories and looking through these postcards. And it's just unimaginable, absolutely unimaginable, to be someone from the thousands or millions who received these little boxes ringed with black. And it's just an extra story to add on. Obviously, most of this podcast was recorded before Remembrance Day during the week. So I can tell you, it was beautiful service watching BBC this morning. I personally left the room for 11, had my own little moment, which I'll try not to repeat here in our room. But it was a brilliant day, and I hope everyone out there used it as it should be used. Don't worry, that's the end now. I won't keep you any longer, okay? But I did think of a slightly better sign off on the way home, and it is thus. In Westeros, just the North remembers, but here, we all do. Good night.